approved.
Hey, Bob.
Good to see you.
See you too.
Up, Mike.
Hey, Bob.
Me shortening the PowerPoint.
Know it published. And if you let it rise, you know, that's the whole page.
We can always pull it.
I told them, I said, it's going to benefit you. No, one of your impact fees, you won't pay that 25% impact.
Testing. 1, 2.
I'm going to go ahead and call the planning and zoning meeting for October 11th to order. Augie Griner is out this evening, so I will be filling in for him. And make sure I've got all of my... First call to order, Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you very much. Would you like to do the roll call?
Yes, sir. Mr. Adams?
Present.
Mr. Albite?
Present.
Mr. Batzel?
Present.
Mr. Gibney?
Present.
Mr. Griner is excused. Mr. Kessel?
Here.
Mr. McLeod?
Here.
We have a quorum, sir.
Fantastic. Would you like to read the agenda notes?
Yes, sir. Cases heard by the Planning and Zoning Commission will be presented to City Council in accordance with the schedule provided after each case in the agenda. Please note that the City Council meetings will begin at 4 o'clock p.m. and are held at City Hall, City Council Chambers, second floor, located at 151 Southeast Osceola Avenue.
Thank you very much. We have the minutes have been provided to y'all in your book. At this point, we'll entertain revisions or motion to approve.
I'll move for approval.
Second. Second. Any discussion? All those in favor of approval of the minutes signify by saying aye.
Aye.
I don't need to do that. Call roll.
Oh, that's right.
Mr. Albright?
Aye.
Mr. Gibney?
Aye.
Mr. Batzel?
Aye.
Mr. Kesselring?
Aye.
Mr. McLeod?
Aye.
Mr. Adams?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Okay. Rezoning cases. We've got rezoning case ZON 10-0027.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Peter Lee, City of Ocala Growth Management Department. I'd like to submit the planning comments as Exhibit A for the record. This is a change from R1 single family residential and R3 multifamily residential to O3 residential office in the high density residential land use district for 6.75 acres at the northwest corner of Southwest 23rd Avenue and Southwest 10th Street, which is also known as Southwest 20th Court. Undeveloped property, excuse me. This property is owned by the City of Ocala. The city has approved an agreement with the Department of Health, the Florida Department of Health, to reserve a subject property for possible development as a children's medical service building. And the city agreed to commence the necessary procedures to rezone the property and to permit the development of medical offices and to cooperate with the Department of Health in the conduct of its due diligence on the property. Excuse me. This request of the RO zoning district is consistent with the future land use element, which requires that all development have adequate services and facilities, including all of the physical infrastructure. The request is eligible to be implemented in the high-density residential land use district. It's compatible with the surrounding area, and it is suitable for the type of development that is allowed in that zoning district. Any questions? Let's go through the slide. The property. The land use maps. See the high density residential in the front, subject property to the west of the map. Again, the surrounding land use or the surrounding zoning districts. Some drainage retention area on the PUDA and the tower site. and multifamily and single family to the north. These are vacant. This is a vacant tier of R3 zone property. That's this tier. Drainage retention area, tower site, and multifamily. Staff recommends approval of the application.
Okay. Any questions from the board or staff? Okay. Is there anybody in the audience that wants to speak for or against? Can you please state your name and address for the record?
Yes, sir. My name is Mark Hart. I live at 2105 Southwest 7th Place. I'm a resident in that area. Probably two or three years ago, Pontiana Heights neighborhood fought hard to have that property zoned to R1. It's not high density, but it's actually a low density residential neighborhood. And we fought hard and we got it changed to R1. There were some discrepancies in the way that the zoning was changed out there in the prior years. So all of that area from Southwest 27th Avenue to Martin Luther King, from State Road 40 to 17th Street Extension was zoned R1. And we want single family homes out there rather than any kind of TRO zoning. I don't know what is allowed in TRO, but I would like someone to explain it to me or give me something to read. They did do the proper posting. That's why we're here tonight, to oppose anything in there other than single-family homes. That was the last thing that we had discussed, and that's what we'd like to keep this neighborhood, residential neighborhood. I live approximately, I live right on 7th Place. 7th Place adjoins the north end of that property where it dead ends on the corner of 20th Court in this case. Also, I see that in the Star Banner about a week ago, under the opinion column, I see the same thing is happening in other parts of the city. They also say it's fighting to save single family neighborhoods. Say the infringement into single family residential neighborhoods is not necessary. In Ocala, there are many properties on sites and offices available, and I believe that to be true. And I believe that at this time that the city would reconsider changing the zoning on this parcel, Pontiac Heights neighborhood. I appreciate it, and we do want that approved by the neighborhood task force before any zoning is changed. It is R1 now, and we'd like to keep it that way. If anyone would want to come in and put in a single family residence, you can not oppose it.
Okay. Is there anyone else who wants to speak this evening?
My name is Kenneth Coleman. I live at 2052 Southwest 2nd Street, Ocala, Florida. I live in this area. I grew up in this area, matter of fact, before there even was a... well, that was cow pasture. But anyway, I agree with Mr. Hart and everything that he's saying. That they, I thought that they agreed to make this area, Pontiana Heights, a housing, you know, single-family... Oh, well, not single-family, but... housing, and not to put any apartments or any type of commercial, whatever type buildings in that area anymore. And I just think it's just too much too soon. It's just too much traffic in that area right now with people parking in the street. I mean, it's a lot going on if you come over there in that area. Just not because of Jones Elementary, but you got that... Closet made there. You got multiple businesses right in that area, and it's just messing up the whole neighborhoods as far as being peaceful and quiet like it used to be. So I'm against it.
Thank you. Anyone else who wants to speak? Peter, would you like to elaborate any more on exactly what's going to happen?
I can address the issue with, and Mr. Hart, as you recall, the property to the north is the piece that is owned, that is part of the Ponciana Heights that is owned by the gentleman down south. He was the one attempting to rezone that to R3 for multifamily, and that's what I think this board and eventually, I don't think it ever got to city council, got turned down. This piece has always been owned by the city. This is part of the old landfill site. The city has been working with the last 6 months or so with the Children's Medical Services to locate their new facility there. This will be a benefit to everybody in the community. It will allow to have some of the medical services that are now having to go to Chan's or other hospitals that would be located here in Ocala. So we've been working with the Department of Health and on trying to work out if it's feasible for them to go ahead and develop this property. And this is the kind of the first step is the rezoning, and then they have to do some environmental testing on the site. But it will not encroach into the Ponciana Heights neighborhood, which is that buffer piece between the roadway of, I think that's what, 8th or 9th in the property boundary.
Thank you.
Can I ask? Todd, or Pete, I guess, just the back portion of this request is already R3. Is that correct?
The north portion?
Yes. It shows on the zoning map that you gave us in our package. It shows the back portion is R3.
Yeah, portion of it was R1 and R3.
So R3, yeah. The north portion is R3, and the remainder is R1.
And so the R1 portion is on Southwest 10th Street. Is that correct?
Correct.
So the area that's closest to the single family residence is already R3. Is that correct?
That's correct.
All right.
Yes, sir.
And would it normally be that an RO zoning would be less intense than an R3?
Not typically, depending on how you measure intensity. But, you know, you could do...
They could do 30 units per acre.
You have high-density residential in R3, yeah. So you could do dense multifamily
in
residential development.
So more than likely, 30 units per acre is going to be a lot more intensive than what they're proposing for the medical office.
Mm-hmm.
The medical office is going to be relatively small because a lot of that parcel most probably will not be usable because of some of the environmental issues. So so it's going to have to place in a certain area if it goes through. So I don't think it's going to be a very intensive site in terms of the type of facility on there.
Can I ask one more question?
Sure.
And Ty, since you've kind of been leading this, since the city of Ocala owns the piece of property, you're expressing the opinion of what we're planning on, what the city is planning on doing, who they're planning on selling or giving this piece of property to?
Yeah, it's working with them. We've entered into agreement that eventually, if it does go through, then the property would be given to the state, actually, to DEP, I think it is, and the Department of Health. And
sure.
The city wouldn't own the property anymore.
When you do that, is there restrictions on what the state can use that property for?
And they'll be restricted, yes. The agreement is restricted to using it for that use that we've entered into.
So from the people that are residents up in that area, if we tell them that it's going to be for a children's medical facility, that's what it's going to be for, and if it's going to be something different, it's going to come back in some kind of a public...
I mean, the only thing that might back it out if it's determined environmentally it can't go.
Right, but
at that point, we could always change it back.
Yeah, well, I'm talking about use and everything, you know, because what you don't want to do, you don't want to rezone it thinking it's going to be one thing and then it might turn out to be something else. I mean, if we tell everybody it's going to be a children's medical facility, you want to make sure.
And that's what we're intended. That's what we entered into the agreement with. Council agreed to kind of keep the property in dormant for a couple of years while we went through this process so they would be able to get the money. Part of it is they need to get funding from the legislation, and it's going to take, they didn't get it this time, they're going to have the next two years they have opportunity to get that money funded. If they fund it, then they'll be able to move on to it. So it's a long process, but in order for them to keep moving, they needed the proper zoning. This is the most least intensive zone that we think it could fall into without having to change the land use or anything like that. So that's why we're recommending the RO zoning.
We agreed to take them through the entitlement process and through the due diligence period. And if something fell out, if they couldn't do it, it would come back to the city. So then any other use, there would be some kind of a public forum for any change or rehearing, given the or to again give the property away or sell the property, dispose of the property.
The city did the same thing with the O1 piece where senior services went. They kind of said it's the same issue, same environmental issues that they had to overcome, placing the building, and then the property was given to senior services. But they're also looking at, other people have been looking at the PUD 8 and the other R1 piece on the south end too as possible development. But this piece was carved out in order to give them the Department of Health time to get their money in line.
Any other questions?
Any questions?
Yes, sir, Mike. Mr. Finn.
Mike Finn, 2550 Northeast 36th Avenue, Suite F, Ocala. Why don't you zone the institutional tie? Then you guarantee that it's institutional and not offices.
And, one of them would have to change the land use. We were trying not to change the land use, trying to
keep
it.
Well, it'd be more guaranteed to the people.
Well, there's some other uses in institutional that may be problems, too. So the RO is pretty restrictive in terms of...
It's not zoned GU right now?
No. It's been all zoned, part of its own PUD, part of its own
R1. Well, once it's zoned, that's zoned.
At some point, it may be a government use, but we're not sure how it's going to be actually played out in terms of once the funding goes through, how the funding is. It's Dr. Saha is the one doing it, how the money will get down to him. He's for the Children's Medical Society. Medical services.
Well, it's probably important to, at least for the residents, to realize that right now the underlying land use is high density residential. That's true?
Yes.
And it already has an R3 and an R1.
On a portion of it, yeah.
So and as far as it being a low density site, that's not really the case. But I agree with somewhat with Mr. Finn as far as the direction of going to something that would be more appropriate for what you guys are talking about doing. A little bit of a guarantee for the neighbors.
It's just there's other uses too that the institutional, I don't know. It may be better just as we get through, if we go through, just put more deed restrictions on it. And if for some reason it falls, then we can kind of revert it back to the to the R1 and R3. The piece definitely to the north is part of the Ponce Ana Heights, and that's the one that we did change the zoning back from R2 and R3 zoning a few years back. We did the whole neighborhood, and that went back to R1A and R1AA. But this piece was never included. That's why that's why the R3 was still in place, because it was a piece that owned by the city that was never part of the Ponce Ana Heights.
I was under the understanding.
You should, yes.
And this was I need to restate.
Just your name.
Mark Hart. I was understanding that when that was rezoned, all of the land in the parameters of Ponce Ana Heights proper was rezoned to R1, and there was no R3 left in that subdivision, and we grandfathered in those lots along Third Street because they were like 40 foot wide. We gave them permission to go ahead and do whatever they had to do with those houses to bring them up to code, and we left along 40
north section of Ponchana along 40 and Martin Luther King, that could be developed commercial. Into commercial, because that's what primarily it is. But in the subdivision proper, there was no R3 there. Now, where they put the Alzheimer's Center, that slipped by us because that was never changed. That was B1. But even that has created a problem. The last big rain we had there, that place flooded. Water's in the street and water's all the way up to the floors on the first floor of the Alzheimer's Center. We don't want that to happen again over on that corner in question there. But there was no R3 property left in Ponciana Heights.
And again, this wasn't in Ponciana Heights. That's why this piece was never considered, because it was always owned by the city, and all that PUD piece and the R3 and the R1 pieces were in the O1, which was the senior services.
Did we not identify Ponciana Heights parameters?
Yeah.
When we went through that, it took us about 2 years to get that rezoned to R1 to residential. And TRO, again, I'm not sure, once we get it rezoned, I don't see no concept, no plans, no nothing, that the city changes its mind and something else go in there. But Mr. Finn said that it could be rezoned to institutional, which would guarantee only a certain type of construction would be built in that area. Once it's on the TRO, city changes its mind, or the center changes its mind and does not get funding, or something falls through, or the environmental issues come up. That was part of the old city dump. I've been around 73 years. I've been over there 37 years. So there were some PCBs in that particular area that was buried there years ago. I'm not sure when you start disturbing that we're not going to get some problems there. We might know your walk being to the west of that particular parcel. The reason we wanted that rezoned to R1 in the beginning was that the urban sprawl, the apartments were just about to overwhelm us there. And you had Green Gables, we had Sequitings, Magnolia Walk, and somebody else had plans to put other apartments in there. And we had a lot of duplexes down there, which had a lot of problems with crime and other issues. I think you were there with us, so that's why we rezoned to R1, so that we could get residential housing in there and preserve the character of our neighborhood.
Thank you. Pete, did you have something?
I think, regardless of, in my opinion, regardless of whether the children's services use is going to go in there or not, RO to me seems like a proper zoning for that piece. I mean, it's a busy area. It's transitional. It's like a lot of the other pieces that we've looked at recently, going from R1 to RO. I can't imagine people building a single family home on such a busy location. So I'm fine with the RO regardless.
I agree, and I think there's a big plus here bringing the state in. I guess my only concern, I would agree with Mr. Finn a little bit, to the extent that the institutional zoning designation may be a better fit if the eventual use is what's going to be there anyway, and we're pretty confident of that. It would just give a little bit of extra assurance to the homeowners nearby. And I know that there are some uses allowed in institutional zoning that are just as unflattering as what could be put in an R3 or an RO, so I don't know if it really fixes anything. But if this is what the plan is, to bring the state in and to allow the Department of Health to create a children's medical services, I think that's a great intermediate use that fits well with R1.
Thank you.
The one advantage to RO would be that we do have architectural control over what goes there, and it does require compatibility with the surrounding residential care. So there is a review that takes place, unlike institutional. We don't really have as much control over the architecture. actually did happen, is this end user didn't use the property, it could still potentially be developed as R1. Is that likely or not? But it's possible. That's fortunate.
Any other questions? Does anybody like to make a motion?
Mr. Chairman, I'll move that we agree with staff and that we approve the rezoning to RO.
I'll second.
Okay. Any further discussion? Would you like to call the roll?
Yes, sir. Mr. Kesselring?
Aye.
Mr. Batsell?
Aye.
Mr. Albright?
Aye.
Mr. Gibney?
Aye.
Mr. McLeod?
Aye.
Mr. Adams?
Aye.
Motion carries.
The next case is zoning 10-0031.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Peter Lee, I'd like to submit case number ZON 10-0031 as Exhibit A. This is a request to change zoning from R1 single family residential to RO residential office on 0.55 acres at 329 Southeast 36th Avenue. The applicants are Peter L. and Sharon S. May. The agents, Michael Finn. This is a vacant property about 200 feet south of Ward Highlands Elementary School on Southeast 36th Avenue, same side. It is a portion of a larger 1 acre parcel, as you can see on the aerial, that was changed from low density residential to medium density residential years ago in land use, and the portion of the property, the other portion of the property was rezoned to RO. It's vacant. Prior to any office use going on to that site, a site plan would be required, and all of the needed infrastructure would have to, on-site infrastructure would have to be accommodated. Staff recommends approval. The request is consistent with the comprehensive plan. Land use designation of medium density residential is in place. It's compatible with the surrounding area. It's also consistent with future land use element policy 2.5. requiring that adequate services and facilities are available to the lot. And RO is eligible to be implemented in the medium density residential district.
Any questions for staff? Is there anybody in the audience to speak for or against?
Mike Finn, 2550 Northeast 36th Avenue, Suite F, Ocala, Florida. Now, it's odd, I'm up here not trying to get RO, R1. But this is a little different situation. As you know, this house, there is a house on this property. It's an old Lampier house. They call it a keyhole house. It looks like a cloistered house with a round circle where you go through the doorway and the wall. On the corner, we have a lawyer's office at 36 Fort King. Then we have the exchange for, used to be Florida Telephone, now it's something else, Centel or something. Then we have the Christian Scientist Church. We have two houses, one house in the street, then another house, and then vacant property. And this house is on this other piece. The piece to the south of it has already been zoned RO, and it's vacant. And then immediately south of that is Ward Highland School. So it is compatible to the neighborhood across the street, as you see, as an institution, Highland Baptist Church, and then a lawyer's office across the street. Mr. and Mrs. May, they have lived in this home at one time, and this line goes right through the middle of the house. So what if anything would be done, it would have to be done with a good site plan and everything else. But they want to improve the property and then have some potential tenants that might want to rent this area.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions? questions?
I was just going to say, Mike, the back, I guess the east portion that fronts on the 37th, you're going to leave that in RO. I mean, R1.
The land use only went back 150 feet.
Yeah, so, I mean, you're leaving the back portion in...
In R1.
Yeah, R1.
They own that. But as you see the on your map, the land to the south, it lines up in the back.
Right. Part. Okay.
Okay?
Yes.
So there's no infringement on Southeast 37th Avenue at all.
Gotcha.
Thank you. Anyone else? Bring it back to the board. Any discussion?
Mr. Chairman, I'll move that we agree with staff to approve the rezoning.
I'll second the motion.
Okay. Would you like to call?
Yes, sir. Mr. Kesslerly?
Aye.
Mr. McLeod?
Aye.
Mr. Albright?
Aye.
Mr. Betzel?
Aye.
Mr. Gibney?
Aye.
Mr. Adams?
Aye.
Mr.
Next case, land use 10-0027 and zoning 10-0030. Centers.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is a request by the centers with Lauren Emeriam III as agent to change the land use from public buildings and facilities and medium density residential to retail services, and the zoning from governmental use GU and two family residential R2 to B2 community business. The 3.37 acres located at 717 Southwest 16th Avenue. There's an existing approximately 24,000 square feet of behavioral health care facility at that location. Go through the slides. Subject property along Martin Luther King, just north of State Road 200. The fire station just south of Martin Luther King Park. You can see the split in the land use and here compatible with the request was compatible with the retail uses that surround it. And again, split zonings. This is a subject property looking east into the property. And again, looking in from the east. Looking south into the campus. And again, looking south. There's a single family located to the north. And the funeral home across Martin Luther King to the west. This request... This use is actually a non-conforming use in at least the portion of the zoning district that it's in. It's questionable as to whether it's allowed in the GU district, as it permits uses that are primarily of national, state, county, or city governments. This is not a governmental entity. It's a non-conformity in the R2 zone and in those land use districts. The land use districts that this use is allowed in don't allow the zoning districts that are necessary to implement this use. They became aware of their non-conforming status when they were doing some investigation into grant availability, and a lot of times on those applications or any kind of refinancing option, you've got to be conforming. So it creates a problem for them. If anything ever happens to this structure, they can't extend the use, they could never reconstruct the site. Or alter it. It's basically the state that it's in is a non-conformity and continues to be used. If anything happens to it, it can't. It is an allowable use in the B2 zone, which is community business. The less intense of the zoning districts that are allowed in the retail services land use designation. This site meets the future land use element policy and requirements for location of retail services at signalized intersections, policy 1.1.7. Again, it has adequate infrastructure as required by future land use element policy 2.5. It's compatible with the surrounding area and land use designations, and it has existed for some time. B2 is eligible to implement the retail services land use district, and that's why it was chosen. And staff recommends approval of the request. Questions?
Thank you. Any questions for staff?
Yeah, I have one. So you're saying, I don't understand. You're saying that there is a land use that would be compatible with the use, but there's not a zoning that would be compatible with that
land use. The two land uses that are in place and don't allow the land use or the zoning district B2 to be implemented. So you, to have a zoning district that allows the use, you have to change the land use to be able to implement that zoning district also. So you have to change the land use to retail services and the zoning to B2 to allow that the use. It's not allowed in R2.
That's not really what I'm asking.
Okay, we ask.
What I'm asking what would be another zoning or land use classification besides the two that options that you have, B2 and retail services? I mean, obviously GU, you said, doesn't conform.
There's
to
a
that.
Question. It's not really a governmental use.
Right.
So I would take a conservative approach on that land use and zoning district and say it's not allowed. I'd be a little more definitive. It's been used for some quasi-governmental entities.
I guess what I'm saying, in your opinion, B2 and retail services are the most appropriate for this particular use that's already there?
I think given the land use and zoning that's around it, and given the fact that given their needs, I think it's the most appropriate. I don't know that it could be accommodated in a lesser option, in a less intense option.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's mainly why I'm asking. I was kind of surprised there weren't anyone in here speaking up about that. Obviously, that's a much more intensive land use and zoning classification pushing up against the neighborhood that's there. And it's basically the same neighborhood that was already in here before discussing
that neighborhood actually definitively kind of ends at that street. But you're right.
I'm just saying,
point taken.
That neighborhood.
And, you know, it depends, I guess, it's a theoretical question to some degree, is that, you know, services that are provided at those locations are against the neighborhoods, and that's okay. This one's already designed, so the issue of design goes out the window. But part of what we've been, which you'll hear about later on, is that, you know, the proximity of uses as opposed to buffering the uses, and of neighborhood commercial to residential, and you know, integrating some of those into the neighborhood. In this case, the fact that it's already there, I guess, you know, I don't know if this is an argument of semantics. I guess the biggest point would be if it was sold and redeveloped, that everything that's allowed in B2 would be allowed there. And so it would be, you know, there would be some concern, and design would be, I think, the way that you'd overcome that if it got to that point. But there would be a concern.
Mm-hmm.
Any other questions?
Why didn't an office land use and all fit this use? Was there a reason for that? And I guess isn't that kind of what?
Yeah,
I mean, I
think if you don't know what's there and you're looking at the map, you can see how it conforms with retail services around it, but you're pushing into there. Well, you already have a use, so is there maybe something else that is more, you know, permanent? Because like you said, if something happened to it, you can go in there and you can do whatever you want to do on
retail services,
which is much more intensive than what's there.
I mean, was there a reason why you didn't look at some kind of an office use?
Professional services. It's not transitional recovery. It's an office. behavioral health care facility. In an O1 is typically, you know, there's a lot of design that goes along with that. So typically, in an O1 district, you would have design considerations that would be taken care of prior to development.
Yeah, well.
It's a little, again, it's the other side of the argument.
I mean, part of me doesn't have a problem with it because it's there. It's been there for, I don't know how many years. 30-something, yeah. I mean, it's been there for a long, long time, and I don't see it going anywhere. But then again, Nate, I can see your point of view. If you were just looking at if this was a vacant piece of property, I don't think staff would be saying, let's put retail services on down Martin Luther King that way. I think that there'd be some concerns about that. So...
And if you're working in a 30-year-old building...
Yeah, I mean, you know, the thing is that, I mean, I want to, you know, I want to do whatever we need to do to make sure that the centers can have the options that they need so that they can add on and they can expand and they can do all, you know, I mean, I fully support all of that. But, you know, that's a real good comment and everything. And I think that they could probably still do that inside of some kind of an office land use. Unless staff tells us differently.
Yeah, for the B2 use.
Yeah.
Y'all's concern was to go to the B2. I think when we looked at that, I know Patty's had a number of meetings with them, that the B2 fit everything, kind of what they wanted to do, and not just the office. There may be some limitations by the office because they do. I mean, it functions more of a hospital. I mean, it's always been kind of functioning as a hospital type facility.
They have inpatients.
They've had at different times. Yeah. They've had people that get evaluated there and then placed in other places. I mean.
They'd have a bed facility.
Yeah, and they've had that in the past, and they may start addressing some of more of that.
Right.
But it's a combination of office intake. They do some of the intake in different counties too. They do, and they go to different sites and everything.
If there were people inpatient staying days at a time, would that be allowed in an O1 or no?
I think we were looking at it, and I think that's why Patty wanted to go with the B2 was
right.
Because it fit more of the hospital type use and some of those uses that allowed in the B2 versus the O1. We were concerned that it wasn't.
What is the hospital? What zoning is that sit on?
Well, different hospitals and actually an OP is one of the hospital, then an institutional. But I don't think we would classify it strictly as. A hospital zone, but that was some of the issues was trying to get it all fit into what was the best zone for. There didn't seem to be one zone that fit it all. You know, that we first looked at going to the office zone, and then we first, you know, looked at the GU, but it really didn't fit the GU because it's not always now in a government entity. It is more of a private entity, but it has some government involvement. So I think the B2 was the best overall fit that fit all the categories that they wanted in there. I don't think they planned on having any strict retail, but mostly it's going to be functioning as a facility that would allow them to evaluate patients, and then those patients would be moved off of it.
Would it be appropriate to let the applicant fill in some blanks for us?
Yeah. They could do a better job of explaining it.
Hello, my name is Lauren Miriam. I'm the attorney for the applicant. My address is 4 Southeast Broadway. I'll attempt to answer maybe specific questions about the use of the building, but we have a representative of the centers who knows more in detail what goes on in the building. About 80 or 70% of it is clerical office administrative. The northeast corner has a structure that was your crisis building before the new facility got built on Airport Road. So it has in the past had bedding and housing. that is not the intent for the future unless my client corrects me, except for the possibility of a limited, like a overnight, the person arrives at 10 p.m. or midnight, they might stay overnight until the next day. There was a limited discussion of kitchen facilities, but it's basically going to be a microwave oven and heat a bowl of soup or have a sandwich. They really didn't want to have kitchen facilities. It's designed for a very limited period of time. A person arrives, their needs are evaluated, and hopefully they can be transitioned to a proper location in 2, 4, 6 hours. But depending on when they arrive at night and the staff present, they might say, okay, here's a bed or a couch for 6 or 8 hours. And the client's representative is here if you want to ask a specific question that I can't answer.
Well, I was just, Ty, just a clarification. I mean, the kind of limited overnight that they're talking about, that can be done in a RO, in an office park situation, right?
In an O1, I mean, Lauren, I know we had further discussions, and I know you had most of them with Patty, and then I'm sorry she's not here, she had an emergency. There were some issues that that didn't make sense for you to be in an O1. What were those?
I don't know. We talked for about an hour. We went over all the uses, and the conclusion was, and we recognized the intensity of it, the B2 was the best suited for the purpose. And again, I don't know exactly what the future grant application will allow. I think that may have something to do with it, with what would it take to secure the grant for the remodeling of the structure. But the B2 was considered the safest. I certainly don't want to stand here and say it's absolutely positively the only thing that could be done, but it was felt that that would cover all the potential uses, and that realistically you're a few feet off of State Road 200 and next to a fire station. It's not exactly the most quiet location as it is now. And you do have the game and fish to your east, with their storage yard, almost like a law enforcement facility. So that's why it was thought the B2 wasn't really invading into anybody's territory. There is a road to the north of the property. Any other questions?
Any other questions? Anybody from the audience to speak for or against? Back to the board. Further discussion or a motion?
I'll put on the record, I'm on the board of the Boys and Girls Club, but it's no effect on, I don't know if I have to say that, but I just wanted to let you know, but I don't think it affects my vote.
No.
Well, while we're saying that, actually I need to say that I used to serve on the board of the centers, but I am no longer on that board, so I do not have a conflict, but I wanted that on the record. And based upon that, I'll go ahead and move that we agree with staff for the change of the land use and change of the zoning as recommended.
Okay.
I'll second.
I'd like to call the roll.
Mr. Kesselring?
Aye.
Mr. Albright?
Aye.
Mr. Batzel?
Aye.
Mr. Gibney?
Aye.
Mr. McLeod?
Aye.
Mr. Adams?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Now don't go selling it to a shopping center now, okay?
Our next case is annexation case 09-0007, SSB LLC.
Your government grants usually prohibit the resale of the property.
That's true.
Thank you.
This is case number ANX 09-0007, an annexation of 4.01 acres in the 3200 block of South Pine Avenue, currently undeveloped. There is a site plan approved for a medical office campus with 4 office buildings totaling nearly 33,000 square feet and a fast food restaurant. This property is contiguous at its southwest, as you can see. Currently vacant. Looking west into the site. vacant car dealership adjacent to the north, hotel adjacent to the south. Businesses across the furniture store and a motel across the street to the east. This annexation is requested in order to obtain city water and sewer. The applicant filed the petitions to amend the future land use element and the associated zoning classification for general business and retail services. And staff recommends approval.
Any questions? Anybody from the audience?
Good evening. Paolo Mastrosario, 170 Southeast 32nd Place. I'm the engineer of record here representing the client. Basically, we're in the county. Went through a site plan process in order to get water and sewer. We have followed petition for annexation. Plan's been approved. It's been approved with medical facilities and a fast food element, but also it can have retail services as well. I just wanted to make that clear. So if there are any questions, I'll be glad to answer them. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Good. Any discussion or motions?
I move for approval and agree with staff's finding.
Okay.
Second.
Call roll.
Aye.
Okay. Mr. Albright?
Aye.
Mr. Gibney?
Aye.
Mr. Batfo?
Aye.
Mr. Kesselring?
Aye.
Mr. McLeod?
Aye.
Mr. Adams?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Okay. Next case, annexation 10-0004. Scott Sommer?
Thank you. I'd like to submit staff comments for case number ANX 10-0004 as Exhibit A. This is a request by Scott Sumner, property owned by Scott Sumner and Arthur Sullivan, for annexation of 1.686 acres at 4200 block of Southwest College Road, it's also known as State Road 200, currently undeveloped. Again, in order to obtain city services, specifically water and sewer. Subject property, as you can see, is contiguous to its northeast property line. Looking into the site, it's currently vacant. It's got a curb cut along State Road 200. Typical development that surrounds it, car dealership to the south. Market Street.
The annexation, again, the applicants filed the companion petitions to amend the future land use designation to retail services and the zoning classification to B4 general business. As I said, the annexation request is in order to obtain city water and sewer services. It is contiguous and staff recommends approval.
Any questions for staff? Is there anybody in the audience to speak for or against?
Hello, Scott Sumner, 4701 Northeast 36th Avenue, Ocala. And looking at the map, we should have asked for the one next door too, which is a little bit bigger parcel. We had a site plan approved for the one to the west or southwest. For an automotive dealership, it's approved a little too large a parcel, didn't need that much, so we're now designing one for Joe London on this 1.86 acre parcel. Both are going to need city services, and I did not realize before that Mr. Ray had annexed in right next to us. I didn't think we were contiguous yet, but now that we are, we need to go ahead and move forward with the annexation.
Okay, thank you. Any questions? Thank you, Mr. Sumner. Any discussion?
If there's no further discussion, I move approval.
Second.
Okay. Call roll, please.
Mr. McLeod?
Aye.
Mr. Kesselring?
Aye.
Mr. Albright?
Aye.
Mr. Batherell?
Aye.
Mr. Gibney?
Aye.
Mr. Adams?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Thank you. Okay. That brings us to code of ordinances. COD 10-0014.
Staff is going to withdraw that ordinance at this point. We'll be possibly addressing it with the Downtown Business Alliance, and we've had some conversations with them. City Council instructed us to draft an ordinance to kind of look at some of the uses in the downtown. There's been some concern about that, and so we want to, before we move forward with it, we wanted to get more input from the downtown, and we're not sure. So we're just going to, at this point, when it would come back, or if it's going to come back. So we're just going to withdraw it, and then if we'll need to, we'll bring it back later.
Okay. We need to take no action, correct?
No action, yeah.
All right. That brings us to number 7.
Just to clarify on the centers, and I'm sorry because I was outside and I didn't recall it all. Some of the uses in the O1 did not fit because of exactly what they're doing, possibly with people coming for short stay. It didn't fit in hospital. It didn't fit in ALF. So some of the uses that does fit, even though it's not really functioning that, it's more of a transitional facility, which is only allowed in those B2s. So that's why it was for them to do kind of be conforming and meet the grant requirements. The B2 was the safest one because they really didn't quite fit the hospital. There wasn't a hospital, which more is institutional, or the ALF. And that's so we were looking at first to try to do the O1. And I knew it was there, and I just, Patty's been dealing with most stuff, and so Pete didn't have a chance to talk with them on that. So that was the reason why they went to the B2.
Thank you. Okay, number 7, Ocala 2035 Vision.
Good evening, Paolo Mastrosario again. Basically, I am the chairman of the 2035 Leadership Committee, and it's been a great process. Staff did a great job helping us out as well as the consultants. We met periodically, got public feedback. Maybe I should start off by asking all of you been involved. I know I've seen some of your faces there at these meetings and hope you all know what's going on. So we'd like to provide you with like a presentation of how we're going to be moving forward from here on out. We're going to present it to council for adoption. I think we'll start off with a video.
And truly, the leadership group did do an excellent job. I mean, they really took the lead. I mean, we as staff were there to help support them. The consultants were there to help guide them. But it was really about them coming up with the plan. It really wasn't about, you know, just telling them what to do. They really told us what to do. So we learned a lot from them and what they would like to see in the future. And I think they did an excellent job.
Instead of us taking notes, it was staff and taking notes. So that was pretty good for the game.
And it was really refreshing to be on that side, to really try to be working really with the public and trying to get their, you know, trying to help them implement. It's really, because it's really about their plan and not about, it's not about our plan. It's not about the Planning and Zoning Commission's plan or City Council's plan. It's really the people's plan. So I really enjoyed that portion of it, and I hope we continue that. We're going to try to keep the leadership group involved in the process as we go through the comp plan changes and the code changes, and maybe some of the new members may.
Talk to you a little bit tonight on some of these zoning changes on what the residents of Ocala would, you know, like to see in certain areas would probably help kind of solidify in your mind, you know, that's consistent with the vision. So the leadership group intends to stay involved in being available at these meetings and council meetings to make sure that vision is followed and help you all see where it's going. But you'll see there's a map in there. It's on page 16, and we'll get to that a little bit through the presentation. Thank you.
Thank
we'll
you.
Start with the video. Consultants and city staff and council.
two of our members, Todd Rudiani and Summer Gill, actually put that together, so we had no idea how to do any of that in Facebook.
No, I don't think I know. Okay, so I'm going to try to expedite this pretty quickly and go through the agenda. So you'll see why we've got several parts on the agenda, why a vision, history and education, public participation, you know, what's recommended for the Ocala 2035 vision, and implementation strategies, and where we move from here and our next steps. So why a vision? Obviously, to establish priorities for future decisions, what you would like the city to look for, you know, how we're going to get around the community, the relationship between buildings and streets, how are they designed, what will the buildings, neighborhoods, commercial districts, and open spaces look like. Vision will provide a foundation for public community issues for the year. Before new comp plan, land development code changes, sub-area plans, parks and rec master plans, and then urban form and design guidelines. Okay, what is the leadership group? Well, we're comprised of 18 individuals from all different walks of life, and what struck me as surprising is that I only recognized a few faces when we had our first meeting. And so I'm very pleased that we have a diverse group of individuals that we can get different input from different parts of the town and community and what everybody wanted. And I can say that it seems like we all, even though we're from different parts of town, different professionals, different demographics, we all had one common goal, and that was to, you know, have a great city to live in and look out for the citizens of this community for, you know, the next 25 years. So. All right, history and education. What does the historical Cal look like in the 1900s? Here you're looking at photo of, what was that one? Magnolia. And this is Pine. Yeah, Pine and Broadway. You can see buildings kind of close to the road, look pretty walkable, and now here's what happened, what, 1950s?
Yeah, 52.
The Federal Highway Act, this is north on 441, you see in the distance buildings pushed back, more lanes, not very many cars on the actual river. And this is today, looking north on Pine, you see the state attorney's office there in the distance. You got a divided highway in some parts here, and buildings are pushed back in that vicinity. I guess the only building that's close to the road there. I guess, you know, back in the day, the trends were to jam people up on top of each other, and then people were getting water and airborne diseases, so the option was to start spreading people out, and as a result of that, you know, people weren't walking, people aren't walking now, that's why we've got an obesity problem in here, and so we're able to deal with those water and airborne diseases now through vaccines, but in turn we've now pushed people out, urban sprawl, and with no walkability, so hopefully this vision can get people, like the girl said in the video, live, play, eat, walk, all in the same area. So now we're looking at what other communities have done. They obviously were not the first ones to do something like this. So we're going to see a couple of slides of what was done in Police San Jose. So this is 1975 San Jose. I mean, doesn't look very different from kind of like where we are now in some parts of this community. And this is what it looks like now. They've got a transit system, trees planted, got sidewalks, buildings pushed up and close to the road. So a major, major improvement. This is Baldwin Park in Orlando, which is a naval station, that's correct? Yeah, and they went in there, and this is what it looked like before. went and scraped it, and now they've created this beautiful, I would say, conglomeration of a center with retail and commercial uses around it with offices, and then pushed out the residential. So you can see anybody living in the neighborhood in that vicinity can easily walk out their front door and get to their necessities and entertainment without having to jump in a car. And this is these are some close-up photos of what it looks like. So what are the building blocks of the Gray community? These are the three main topics that we focused on as a leadership group. We have mobility and community connectivity, urban form and open space, and building and site design. So, you know, what do those mean? Mobility and community connectivity is, you know, how we connect people beyond modes of transportation, streets, sidewalks, transit, allowing interconnectivity of parks throughout. You know, the whole thing about how it would be if you would venture out on a weekend with your significant other or kids and be able to shop, you know, have you stop at a park and then eat and then walk back to your house or, you know, take a short trip in your car. And then urban form and open space, where do we identify the areas in the city for high intensity to low intensity? And what I mentioned to council is it's difficult for me to, as an engineer, to get my head around high intensity, low intensity. I'm thinking high density, low density. Well, low intensity, the higher the intensity, the closer the buildings are to the streets. The lower the intensity, they're pushed further back. So you can have a Walmart or, you know, a community hospital for children as a low intensity development because it's pushed far back away from the road. So that's kind of what I was mentioning before. Touch on that a little bit. And then, of course, you got building and site design, how buildings and sites are placed in relationship to the road and surrounding areas, how these buildings interact with the general public, and the walkability of everything. Public participation. We had 8 leadership group meetings. I'm not mistaken. Do we have any more than that? Three public workshops, a citywide kickoff workshop, and design conference, and then some small focus group meetings from ELO, William Bryan Hughes, leadership group meetings. Basically planning staff, we got together, looked at these three main topics that I've addressed before. Then we had a big workshop on the 8th of June, and again, I was really surprised to see some unfamiliar faces there. We truly did get some great feedback from the residents of this community. And then these are the focus group meetings that I think Summer did a lot with these, and maybe the ELO.
Mike Daniel, City of Palos Alto Management Department. The focus group meetings were actually put on by city staff, and we met with a variety of different groups throughout the community, and again, just trying to reach out to the community that typically wouldn't come to meetings to try to get them to participate and get their feedback. So, you know, we did meet with the emerging leaders of Ocala, we met with representatives of the healthcare community, and then we met with a few different groups of children, kids mostly. They were which again, typically kids wouldn't participate in this process, so we really have to go to them to try to get their input.
Thank you.
The citywide design conference at the Euro Center, we had, like I said, a good turnout, and did some activities and some exercises to help educate the public on what mobility and urban form and open space and site design we're all about. We'll handle it through urban form open space exercise, like I said before, where we identify these areas in the city for parks and intensities, low intensity, high intensity. And you can see these are road maps where people have different color markers, kind of the green over there, I believe, is the low intensity of your park, and reds are the higher intensity. So if you look at all these maps, it's pretty interesting to IRA, but pretty similar in the format that the general public was putting down on that paper. And then we had the Lego exercise, which I thought was a pretty good exercise for the building and site design on how you can, you know, take a downtown block and do different intensities as you move on from high intensity to low intensity. And that was really impressive, I think, to see what our local residents came up with in design. So one of the first part of our workshops that we had with the general public, we were given some little circles that we would place on what the community would like to see, mainly priorities. Like one, you can see the first time there's a lack of high density mixed use development in the city, and hands down that was one of the most the category that received the most amount of stickers. And so it was pretty interesting to see that people wanted to see change in mixed use, and our current codes don't allow for that, and hopefully this vision will allow for that to happen. And I've always said from being on this leadership group that, you know, I know it's a lot to wrap around and think what's 25 years going to look like here in the city, but we got to start small somewhere. We got to start somewhere, and we can start small and see how it works and then build upon that in other parts of the community. This is the website, okay, yeah. 2035vision.org. I've been looking at some nice snapshots of myself, but you know, it's got basically all this material that we have presented before you today and what's happened. So now, what's the recommended 2035 vision? I would say that maybe this might be a good time to say we actually have come up with a vision statement, and it's in your packet, where Ocala is a great place to live, play, and prosper. So that's what you want to be able to say. You're sitting in the middle of downtown in 2035 and somebody comes up and says, hey, what do you like about Ocala? And you can say Ocala is a great place to live, play, and prosper. That's what our goal is. I've been here for 25 years. I hope that my kids want to stay here. And I come from an area in New York that I could essentially walk to school, parks, grocery store, and not, you know, if my parents didn't have to hop in a car and wheel us around. And hopefully we can get some of that community feeling in Ocala. And what you have here on the slide is the our overall map, page 16 of your package. And obviously we've, from public input, public comment, the downtown corridor in the North Magnolia District and heading south off 40, that was, you know, the most intense area, and you can see at some of the interchanges and at the airport, we went to a medium high intensity, and then the yellow is like a lower intensity. But our goal is to try to interconnect a lot of this, these areas with parks, linear parks, road diets, where we could maybe improve some of these roads. I know a lot of feedback that we received, you know, State Road 200 looks tired, 441's horrible, you know, looking, State Road 40, I mean, they're all state roads, so how do we get DOT to work with us? And that's part of our goal as a leadership community, or leadership committee, is to see if we can't try to work something out to try to start beautifying some of our roads so it's more appealing, people want to get out and walk and enjoy what Ocala has. All right, so how do we get there? Obviously, the plan is only one part of the community vision. Got, you know, implementation strategies that we need to put forth to get the outcomes we would like to see. Here are some recommended implementation strategies. You got general step strategies, urban form, open space, building, site design strategy, mobility. They're all going to pop up here in a second. Obviously, we want to adopt the vision. You know, initiate comp plan amendments to try to remove some of these barriers. Use this vision as a guide, especially to y'all and council and staff that's coming through with land use and zoning cases and seeing what the citizens of this community. actually half of that, because people are out there walking and getting around and enjoying the park. Obviously, building and site design, this is kind of honed in on my area. Being an engineer, I've seen the barriers that we're up against in trying to plan sites and buildings. And now that some of these barriers will be removed, you know, it's going to give some more room to get creative and provide, I guess, a better building and site for the general public to enjoy. And then mobility, community connectivity strategies, you know, streetscape master plans. I got into that earlier. I'm trying to give these roads a road diet, even looking at future roads that the county or the city might be widening, and, you know, making those roads more user-friendly to the pedestrian rather than just trying to zip cars through. And I know there are roads in this town that are posted at 35 and 45, but people are driving 67 miles an hour. One right by my neighborhood is a case in point. And my wife won't even walk on that road, but it's a 35, 45 mile an hour road. And I think with road diet, we could accomplish maybe people would drive through slower and maybe enjoy the view with trees and linear parks and landscaping. Okay, yeah, here, this kind of goes into what I said. Okay, yeah, provide a trolley service that connects West Ocala to downtown. Established residential densities and commercial intensities to support the use of public transportation. You know, we've got rail line that runs right through downtown Ocala that goes all the way to 36th Avenue, but, you know, goes behind St. John's and Brick City Park. And it'd be great if we could start utilizing that rail line and trolleying people to Tuscarawilla Park. And you can park at 36th Avenue, come into downtown, enjoy the park, do your shopping, hop it back on. I think we have a great asset here. Hopefully we get to use it and implement it. That's just a personal idea of mine. I'm just want to throw that out there. So what are our next steps? October 19th is the city council meeting to adopt the vision. The 26th is the Parks and Rec Master Plan, which I mentioned earlier. And then the comp plan evaluation and the appraisal report and amendment. Going to be happening in 2010, is that correct? Mike, you can elaborate.
We have to do our evaluation and appraisal report. We will be bringing that evaluation to the Planning Commission, probably the 75% plan, next month, and hopefully have the completed plan for December's Planning Commission. Then we'll take that to City Council, submit it to DCA for their initial review, then they'll come back, if they have any comments, we'll make the changes, bring it back for one final review, and then hopefully we'll send it back to DCA, and hopefully that will have our evaluation and appraisal report completed. After that step, then we have another year to do the year-based amendments, which would actually implement what we've evaluated with the evaluation and appraisal report, which again, you know, the foundation of that is going to be based on the vision that Paolo has been talking about.
That's pretty much it. Yes, so I tried to go through there fast.
Did a great job. Thank you very much for the time and effort that
sure,
you put in tonight and all the time that went into this prior.
Thank you. We look forward to continue to, you know, be involved in some sort of committee or subcommittee, and you know, if there are any questions that anyone has, you know, please feel free. And if I've missed anything, you know, Mike, come ahead and jump on in. But
well, I think you guys did a great job. I mean, I hope that obviously there's. You guys got to carry on this whole thing. This is the type of thing that 5 years from now there's a vision 2040, and
yeah,
no one remembers what happened. So I think you'll stay on top of it. Well, that's obviously what needs to happen.
Yeah,
but I don't know why you let this picture get put in here of you and Albright.
Oh yeah.
On 12. He just looks like he's sleeping, and I don't know what he looks like.
I didn't have control of what's going in there. That was probably our first meeting. and I think I mentioned we should take that picture out of it, but we are committed to staying on top of this, and we have got to take a stand eventually. Oh, I know Ocala's been through lots of studies, and people say, well, you can't do anything with this road, you can't do anything with that road. Well, yes, we can. I mean, how do all these other communities do it? They're willing to make a stand and say, or take a stand and say, you know what, this is what we want Ocala to be, this is what we want our community to be, and if you don't like it, tough luck. But this is, I think Winter Park's a good example.
Two things. One, and you're right, there's been a lot. I was talking right before we came in. I actually served on the committee that did the Vision 2020 plan back in the mid-80s, that you all use as a basis for this. So there's been a lot of talk for a long time. And I think that what you all did with this really brought all of it together and I think gave us that next step. What's going to be hard is actually implementing. It's just like an earlier, I hate to use specific examples, but everybody says we need higher density until it's next to them.
Right.
And everybody says they want mixed use and they want all this stuff until you say that's going to cost a little bit more money, then they don't want to pay for it and all.
Right.
So I think it's, it's going to need the group to stay together to keep the pressure on us and on city council and make sure that we actually keep that vision in front of us of where we're going.
Yeah.
Because that's what happened last time. I think that, people lost what that vision was, and it became harder and harder to implement. So
we hope to keep it alive. I mean, this plan came from the residents of this community, and it's like, well, darn it, if you didn't want it to look like this, or you didn't want this mixed use or higher intensity, where were you when all these public workshops were going on? I mean, the general consensus from all the public input has been what you see in front of you is this map. And we're going to try to keep this thing alive. Like I say, I don't want my kids to leave here. I don't want to leave here. I want to stay in this community, and I think it's got great potential. And like I say, funding, taxes, we got to take a stand somehow and make this vision happen.
And part of it is going to be trying to reinforce that. I mean, everything that we do from the city, we're going to have to say to council, is this mm-hmm. consistent with the vision? I know we have the cases that are coming up on the 19th. They're going to be following right behind the vision is the ones on 17th Street, and that's going to most probably be a good test, in terms of the vision, Amy, in terms of, in the past, not in my backyard, but what we're hearing is that we want maybe more mixed use. We want to have some walkability, and maybe redeveloping those as offices is a first small step. It's not a huge step, but I mean there could be some compatibility issues that we can solve by doing some of these things. So it's going to be interesting to see how some of that, because we're going to be testing it right off the bat. And just like tonight too, we're speaking with Mr. Hart outside was about. I mean, I think it's great if we could have something like that in a community that people could walk to and not just, drive to, that it serves a large base, that people could travel by bus service and everything. So I think that's a reason why they were trying to locate it somewhere centrally, not on, further out on the west side of town or further out on the east side of the town to kind of keep it central. So,
yes, sir.
Todd, just to follow up, do you see that over the next little bit as we work through the year amendments and the do you see us, the city of Ocala, taking the lead in changing the comp plan to align its land use and stuff with the vision?
Well,
we did something similar to this when I was out in the county when we did the corridor studies and stuff. Yeah. And one of the goals to that is because what we found was the county's comp plan was not a planning tool. It was basically a reaction to whatever was on the ground. And so everything that you thought that might have to happen ran into big conflict, and what we tried to do was say, this is the vision, this is the goal, and I think that they're trying to implement their new comp plan to represent their vision so that it makes it either easier to change things where it needs to be changed or makes it much more difficult to change things where the vision says you're not supposed to change it. So is that kind of what your thought is?
Yeah.
That the next year or so we're going to be doing a lot.
I mean, I don't think we're going to spend a lot of time on the ear because we're not going to try to make it this document where we go, you know, agree, not agree, you know, dig good, not dig good. I think it's more big picture type of things. We really want to get more into the ear-based amendments, and I think this board will be doing more of that than actually the ear.
Because wouldn't that help, like, take the 17th Street as an example, and this may be assuming a lot, but it appears on the plan that you're saying along 17th Street may need to have some higher density than, or higher intensity than single-family residential. Do you see the city voluntarily coming up and saying, we're going to change the land use along 17th Street on our own, and changing that land use to something of a little bit more intensity, as opposed to letting each of these come up and percolate individual cases?
It would probably come about as a total map change.
Right.
If we do that. Yeah.
And we did a lot of that during the original comp plan. I mean, we tried to make significant changes, and I think we did a lot of it, but again, it was, I mean, the problem with the counties and the city's comp plans back then was it was just a DCA document, and all we were trying to do was meet the checklist.
Right.
And I think the counties kind of learned that, and we kind of learned that. Hopefully a lot of cities that you know, the hell with that checklist. The checklist is not the most important thing. It's really planning for the future. So, yeah, I mean, we're going to have to make some of those tough decisions.
I guess that would be my suggestion and everything. If we've got the vision and everything, let's take the opportunity, you know, change our comp plan to a real planning document, which is what it's supposed to be, and let's fight all the battles up front.
You know. The big battle comes November 4th.
The what?
Amendment 4, that's the first big hurdle.
Well, I mean, let's say Amendment 4 does pass, I mean, everything that we do is going to go to the vote, so this vision will help us down the road, that it will help us, I think, try to get something approved if we do have to make significant changes, or we have to make some changes, whatever changes we have to do. I think this process will help. I mean, we didn't go into it saying we need to do this because Amendment 4 is going to pass. I mean, we did it regardless. Amendment 4 didn't exist. It needed to be done either way. But, I think significant things need to be addressed. I think we need to make it maybe a little bit more simpler on the land use side and get away from the uses. And I think that the ordinance that we were going to review with the downtown was kind of a stepping stone to kind of that. But I think we most probably need more dialogue at this point with the downtown people, and maybe it just wasn't the right time to move forward with that. But there's going to have to be a lot of tough decisions, I think, made. I mean, the vision is just the first part of it, and I think the leadership group knows that. I mean, and that's why I think they want to stick with it. And I mean, yeah, it could be, we could just put it up on the shelf and say, yeah, we did this because, you know, DCA required us to do it, or, you know, somebody required us to do it. But I think they want to really move forward with and try to implement, you know, as many things as possible. I'm sure they realize everything's not going to be implemented. I mean, it's, and the vision could change slightly, but, you know, we didn't really ever keep that 2020 vision. You know, that sort of just went away because we were so busy doing comprehensive plan changes to DCA. I mean, we did the DCA plan, not the Ocala plan.
Okay.
And it was good getting a different group. I mean, getting more young people involved into it. I mean, it was really good. Dorothy had a lot of good conversations with high school kids that those voices are never heard. I mean, and we should be hearing them because they are the future of the community. So I think from that standpoint, I think it really did touch a lot of different people that we normally don't get involved in the process. I don't think no action is needed on it. I mean, just any comments or any
questions, comments, or recommendations?
At some point, it's going to be adopted. Y'all are going to have to make a recommendation when it goes into the comprehensive plan later on this year.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Individual commissioners, anything that y'all want to add? Okay. Director's report?
Yeah, just to remind you that those cases on 17th Street from last month are coming up on the 19th, so one has that development agreement on the Marouche one, and then the Albright one doesn't have the development agreement. I think they did some traffic analysis based on some of the comments from the meeting last month.
Any revision that you can enlighten us on in doing that? Or?
I think they looked at it. I think they'd be able to get a driveway in there that would work. I think some of the numbers look okay in terms of the numbers at that peak hour at that intersection. It's not as bad as
any progress in a turn lane?
You mean off of that? Yeah, I mean, that's what they're going to try to... That's what Kimberly Horn is looking at, is that turn lane there off of 22nd into the property. I don't think any progress on 17th.
I was talking
more
off
22nd
onto 17th, right turn.
Yeah, I don't think they're...
That's the issue.
Yeah.
That's what causes the traffic problem at that intersection.
I think they're mostly looking at trying to get traffic turned off at 22nd and making that left turn into the property as they're and looking at the traffic counts there at that intersection. I think they might have had some discussion with the DOT about the driveway, how far they can get it away.
If they could get one of those ride in, ride out, like the CVS on, you know,
right.
that would be ideal.
That'd be perfect.
Seeing, yeah.
And get a right turn lane off 22nd
to
southbound.
It's
a nightmare intersection.
Y'all want to come to the visioning thing. The visioning will be at the beginning on the 19th, and then I think following the other public hearings will be those two cases.
Okay. Anything else, gentlemen? Motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second.
Okay. You don't need to vote, right?
Unanimous.
Right.